Hello and welcome to another episode of The Clippers Beat. I'm your host, Nikki Kay, and holy cow, two nights remaining of the NBA regular season, and who would have thought these two nights would be so crucial in determining the landscape of the Western Conference playoff picture, not only the first round, but the second round as well. So to kind of put things in perspective for the Clippers and the rest of the West, I'm bringing in Keith Smith. He's a contributor for Yahoo Sports and Real GM, among many others, and he is absolutely plugged in to all of the possible scenarios that we could see unfold here in the NBA. I mean, Keith, hard to believe, out of 82 games, it's like a bunch of procrastinators, right? Like, let's not leave anything decided until the last possible minute.
Yeah, and not only that, but let's make it as complicated as possible as well with, you know, this, then this, and that, then this. It almost reminds me of one of those SAT questions from way back in my days.
Right, and if this were on the SAT, I would be left struggling and probably not looking too great for a future college opportunity there. But
that's when you just guess C, right, and call it a day.
Exactly. You skip it and move on, or you circle C. That's the answer. Now, Keith, so when you look at the possible outcomes, I mean, so tonight, pretty much there's two really impactful games. We've got the Nuggets at the Jazz and the Rockets at the Thunder. And then on Wednesday, the end all is the Jazz here with the Clippers. So with these games, what's to be determined?
Yeah, so what's ultimately going to happen as far as it pertains to the Clippers is they're going to be somewhere between 6 and 8. They can't climb as high as 5, obviously can't go any higher than that. So the least likely outcome of the three is the 6 seed. There's only 1, 2, 3, 4 combinations that get them as high as the 6 seed. And then after that, it's about split even between 7 and 8. So you're really watching, you know, tonight you're looking to see what happens in that Utah-Denver game, because Utah could still slide as low as 6. And then really it's that OKC-Houston game. That's the big one you really got your eyes on, because depending what OKC does in that game, their possibilities are all over the map. They can still get as high as 5, and they can be all the way as low as 8, because they've got 2 games to play with a game against the Bucks as well. So that's going to be, you know, you're looking there. If you're hoping to climb up the ladder, you're hoping OKC loses and that Utah wins, because you'd rather see Utah in that 5 spot and then OKC losing. So that's kind of what you're looking for here. And then keep an eye on tomorrow, the Mavericks and the Spurs as well, because that's going to go a long way, whoever wins that game, towards deciding things also.
Oh, of course. There's a fourth game in the mix that just happens to be make things 1 degree more complicated. Now, I'm confused what the Nuggets' plan is, because the other night they sat everyone, but yet they still could be – the 2 seed isn't secure for them, right? So what do you think the Nuggets' plan of attack is as they're going to take on the Jazz?
Yeah, I think what they're hoping to do, well, whether they can pull this off or not, is I think they were hoping to lock up the 2 seed themselves and give Portland the opportunity to move into the 3 seed over Houston, which mm-hmm. that would allow Denver to dodge, obviously, the Warriors as well as the Rockets until the potential conference finals, and force Golden State and Houston have to meet in a potential second round matchup. So I think that's what their goal was, but there's, you know, the Rockets obviously are going to have some things to say about that, as well as Portland. Got another couple of games to go, so that's going to be dependent on where things land. And Denver also, they you know, would do themselves quite well to win their final game tonight against the Jazz. So I think that's what the hope was there, is help Portland move up the ladder a little bit while still maintaining the 3 seed, but we'll see, you know, where it goes.
Interesting. Very, very interesting chess work over here. Now, for the Clippers, I mean, you look at the top 3 seeds in the West, and they have losing records pretty much against all 3 of them. I think actually with the exception of the Rockets, the Clippers did kind of well, but that's kind of the fun first round matchup we would all love to see, just because of the drama and the storylines around it. But what do you think would be the most ideal situation for the Clippers in terms of potential first round matchup, and then should on the very slim chance they pull off the big upset, what side of the bracket it would put them on moving forward.
Yeah, I think you obviously want to avoid the Warriors as long as possible. You mm-hmm. just don't, you know, that's so you're trying to get out of the eighth spot if you can and avoid playing them. And then that really comes down to, do you want to play Denver, Houston, or that very outside chance of playing Portland? And I think you would probably rather play Denver than Houston, mm-hmm. just because Denver doesn't have that playoff experience. They haven't been there as a group, and their most experienced guy in the playoffs is Paul Millsap, and the rest of, they've got a couple other guys with a handful of games here and there, but of their main rotation guys, that they haven't been there at all. And teams tend to struggle in their first time through the playoff run. So I think if you're the Clippers, you're hoping to get in there and maybe you can knock them out and then have a good, you know, competitive series, maybe even pull off an upset there, because it's going to be really hard to do that against Houston, and it's probably going to be near impossible to pull that off against the Warriors.
It's very interesting, because for a two seed, I feel like the entire West is eyeing Denver as the most ideal of the potential first round playoff opponents with home court advantage, because of like exactly what you just said, the lack of playoff experience with the game slowing down in a potential 7-game series. Will that offense sustain, and or will other teams figure out how to kind of limit Denver as they need to? So it's kind of an interesting situation, and I do think the Nuggets have taken a little bit of a stumble, I guess, in the final stretch here of the season. So it's going to be interesting to see how they perform in the first round.
No, it definitely is. And it's tough, right? Because you want to look at it mm-hmm. to say Denver has had such a good regular season, and they've, you know, done everything you wanted them to do. They really stepped forward. Their guys have all played well. They've battled a lot of injuries and made it through that, and have just been really pushing things, you know, as far as they can go. But those doubts are going to be there. Now, they can go a long way towards erasing all those if they get through the first round with relative ease and then are competitive against what's probably going to be Houston in the second round, or maybe mm-hmm. even meets Houston. Obviously, then where, okay, they're just fine. But at this point, yeah, I think that is the way things are lining up. And I think it's the correct line of thinking, too, because I think, you know, again, no one wants the Warriors, so take that off the table. And then when you have Houston, Houston is really, they're rounding into form here. And I think people yep. are looking at that and saying, oh boy, you know, they're starting to look like that team that gave the Warriors, you know, a run for their money last year. And you'd rather avoid them if you can as well.
So what would you have the final 6 through 8 seeds looking like, or what do you forecast them to be after April 10th?
Yeah, so I think it's for me, I think it's going to be Golden State. I do think Denver is going to get that 2 seed. I think Houston, Portland, Utah, and then it's kind of mixed. Oklahoma City's been so up and down this yes. year, but I think they're going to get Houston in this next game, only because it's at home. And I think in a lot of ways, it means a little bit more to them than it does to the Rockets tonight. Mm-hmm. And then they have Milwaukee on the road in the final game, and that game means nothing to the Bucks. So I would be surprised if they have anyone.
Giannis will likely be out for that one.
Yeah, I would be, you know, stunned if they play. So I think that's why they're probably gonna end up in that 6th spot. And then it really comes down to, for me, if San Antonio wins or loses their final game. And that they're hosting the Mavericks, and the Spurs have had this weird late season trend over recent years where they just yes. kind of throw that last game away. Now, on the flip side, maybe they push a little harder, but I do think the Clippers are going to end up in 7 and San Antonio's going to end up in 8. And that's more of a gut feeling, just that the Clippers will beat Utah on that mm-hmm. final game and the Spurs will lose to the Mavericks. But like I said, that's just a complete gut feeling at this point. I don't have really anything to back it up, just based off of a little bit of recent history.
I think your gut is being led by some recent evidence that the Clippers have, you know, given it all night in, night out throughout every game of the season. You can never truly count them out. So knowing how much a first round against either Golden State or the Nuggets would mean by a win, you know, maybe that's what this team gives it in its final push of the season. What have you liked from the games you've watched in terms of the Clippers play, particularly this year?
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, it's just remarkable that this was a team that nobody thought was going to be all that good coming into the season. Then they played really well. And then it looked like around the trade deadline, like they were saying, let's refocus here towards the future. And yet somehow they keep it going. What I really like about the Clippers and their entire, you know, kind of rotation is it's just a bunch of guys who are gamers. There's no real superstars in there, but it's probably one of the teams where everybody knows their role and plays their role really well. Danilo Gallinari is playing fantastic basketball. And then they can put these groups of players on the court that if you don't play as hard as you can, you're going to get beat by them. Because when you're going against Patrick Beverley and Montrezl Harrell and Jamichael Green and guys like that, if you're not bringing it, they're just going to beat you because they're going to outwork you throughout the whole thing. In a lot of ways, this is a prototypical Doc Rivers team, stereotypical, I guess, where it's play really, really hard, go after guys and challenge guys and make things hard on the other team. And sometimes just by playing hard in the NBA, you make your opponent uncomfortable and they don't like that. I know that sounds weird, but playing hard is a skill and the Clippers have that in abundance.
That's right. And, you know, it's I don't think he'll win it, but I do think Doc Rivers deserves a coach of the year nod for the job he's done with this group.
Yeah, 100%. He should be in the mix. I think Mike Budenholzer is going to win that award because of what he's done with the Bucks, and it's kind of we tend to see these things almost tied together to make a great story there. But definitely Doc deserves a lot of credit because, again, the first half performance, and then when it really looked like this team was saying, all right, let's move on. We're trading Tobias Harris. We're going to trade some other guys. We're headed in a different direction here as a franchise. And then they just kept it together and played even better down the stretch in the trade deadline. So I think it's, you know, that he definitely is a worthy candidate and it deserves any love that he gets for the award.
Here's a question for you. The Clippers bench is one of the notoriously best units in the league, but come playoffs time, that's when you see rosters or guys who take the court actually like that shrinks. And so how does that either play into or against the Clippers' favor, having that depth in a lengthy series?
Yeah, this is where I like to talk about what I call functional depth. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter when you have, you know, 11 or 12 good guys, because you're not going to play 11 or 12 guys in the playoffs. But when you know you're 8 or 9 guys, then they're really good. That's what matters. And when you're, you know, when the Clippers are playing their quote unquote normal lineup now, you've got Montrezl Harrell, Lou Williams, and generally Jamichael Green coming off your bench. That's your three key bench guys. And those guys are all very, very good players. And they're, you know, going to be really tough to do much against. So I think it really does matter. I think it gives them an advantage. If we were talking about the 10th, 11th, 12th guys on the roster, that's not as important because those guys aren't going to play much. But 8, 9 guys, those guys are going to play a lot. And the fact that they don't see a big drop off when they go to their reserve group, and a lot of times they even push things ahead because Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell are, you know, if you could split the six man of the year award, you'd probably split it between the two of them. That's mm-hmm. how good they've been.
I know. So right?
That, yeah, exactly. So I do think Lou Williams will get it and deservedly so, but you know, Harrell might finish, you know, right in the mix with him. And that really is going to matter because that's where you don't see that drop off. They can either get you back into a game or they can extend leads. At the very least, they're going to keep you even from where they were. And that does matter in the playoffs where games slow down. You can't afford to give away possessions like you can in a regular season game. Every possession matters a little bit more.
So in what world do the Clippers face the Nuggets in the first round? It would be with an OKC win and 2 Jazz losses?
Yeah, well, it depends on where we've got Denver landing. Because they could definitely see them as, if Denver's in the two spot, the Clippers could easily see them in the seven spot. Mm-hmm. That kind of depends there. I think that's probably the more likely of the two, because the Clippers, again, it's very unlikely that they're going to move up to the six spot. And I'm not sure. I'm looking at the very confusing playoff chart the NBA sent out.
I saw that, and I was like, that's why we got to have Keith break it down here.
So, yeah, I think it's most likely, if Denver's in the two spot and the Clippers are in the seven, that's where you would see that matchup. I think that's the one you would look at. I don't think we're going to get that in the 3-6.
And Denver would secure the two with a win over the Jazz tonight, correct?
Yep.
Okay. So, yes, and then that would go twofold into, okay, so then the Jazz lose, and then if the Clippers pull out the win tomorrow night, they're in the seven.
Yeah, the only way Denver drops is then if Denver beats the Jazz and goes on to lose to Minnesota tomorrow night, then Denver could still drop if Houston wins over OKC. So there is that slight possibility. But I think if Denver wins tonight over the Jazz, Denver's going to be in a spot to really look to kind of close that thing out and get that two spot. So we'll see. You know, they're in a lot of ways, they're in control of this thing, because they're going to look at it and say, all right, well, where do we want to be? You know, what has Houston done? So I think it's, you know, good for them that they can, they'll kind of keep an eye on that Houston Thunder game mm-hmm. as they're playing the Jazz. And maybe, you know, if Houston is losing and in danger of slipping to the four, then you may see Denver say, all right, let's throw this thing away. And hopefully Portland wins their last two and slides up to two, or slides up to the three line, and then Denver's, you know, there. So it's going to be really, you know, it's still pretty messy to see.
I love it. I love it. And the fact that throwing games could still be a possibility, just depending on the course of, you know, 48 minutes tonight, is just incredible to me. It's so exciting. And this is why, you know, while everyone at the start of the season may say, yeah, we know Golden State wins it all, this is why all 82 games kind of become a really fun ride.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those things where, you know, I'm always reminded when we're complaining about how long the season is at this point in the year, I'm always reminded that in a few months, we're going to be like, when does basketball come back? I wish we could do real games on, you know, and we're sitting there and, you know, we're eating up summer league, because it's the only thing we've got going on that's, you know, resembles real basketball. And then we're, you know, in the dark days until the beginning or the middle of the fall. So I try to enjoy this, you know, and I will say it is important this year, because I think what is you really want to keep an eye on here is that teams feel like they can get the Warriors this year more than any time in this run. Mm-hmm. I think they feel like they've shown some cracks. There's been some slippage in their play, and I think they feel like they can get in there, and that's going to be really important to watch, because I don't, as much as, yeah, you don't want to play them before you have to, but I don't think teams have that full-on fear of the Warriors as they've had in the past.
I think that's an incredible point. The lack of fear is huge. And then the next level of that is that it's not going to be a breeze through every round for the Warriors. So whoever gets them in the Western Conference Finals could be facing a beleaguered team. And that might open that door just a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're, you know, Houston, Denver, or anybody else, you get there, what you're hoping for is that they were pushed more than, you know, a couple of sweeps and they're just hanging around. You really want to have them be pushed so that you are going up against them when they're, you know, a little more tired. They've had to extend more energy to win. And I do think there is that possibility. I don't think they're going to struggle too much in the first round.
Yeah.
I think they'll probably breeze through that with relative ease. But that second round, that's going to be harder on them this year than it has been in recent years. And that's going to be really important. And then flipping over to the Eastern Conference, you're obviously keeping mm-hmm. an eye on hoping, all right, I hope they are beat up and tired going into the finals, because this is maybe the best chance the East has had to win since, you know, the Cavs pulled off that, you know, stunner. And the East is, you know, you've got a lot of teams believing in themselves in the East because LeBron's not around. So you're feeling pretty good about your chances there.
All right. And two things from that. I will, though, push back a little bit on the Warriors breezing through the first round. While it may be a four-game rout of the Clippers should they meet as a 1-8 matchup, the Clippers will give them a run for their money in every game in terms of just that grit, like you were mentioning before, fighting night in, night out. So maybe a little bit of hope and shine from LA in that sense.
No, I I'm with you. I think the games will be close, but I think the Warriors win them. And what you're looking for in the playoffs is you want to extend series or have your opponent extended in series. You want them to have to go six or seven games to get it done. And you do want them to be hard fought games. Whoever gets the Clippers, you're not drawing an easy task here. You probably feel pretty good if you're Golden State or Denver or Houston that you can win that series, but you know you're going to have to work to do it, and that's what there's not going to be a just show up, roll the basketball out, and this team quits because they're a 7 or 8 seed or outside chance at the 6. You're feeling like we're going to have to work to beat these guys because they're going to make you have to work to beat them.
Exactly. And lastly, Keith, I know you've got such a good pulse on the Eastern Conference. Who do you have coming out of the East?
Yeah, right now I'm feeling like it might be Toronto's year finally. It's that's tough for them more than maybe anybody. It's because LeBron's not around in the conference anymore. They've struggled with him so much. But I think it's tough to pick against the Bucks. But the challenge for Milwaukee is they're so banged up right now. Giannis is still not fully healthy. And then they're definitely without Malcolm Brogdon, probably for the entire first round. We'll see about the second round. They're going to be likely without Nikola Mirotic. They've got some other guys who are banged up that are rotation players, like Tony Snell and Chris Middleton. That's really hard. And, in the playoffs, I like to say there's no back-to-backs, but you do play just about every other day. There's no point where you're going to get 2-3 games off. It's going to be really important for them to take care of business as quick as they can in the first round and get some time off their feet where they can rest before they get into it. They're going to win the first round no matter who they play. It would be a huge upset if they didn't. Then you're looking at likely the Boston Celtics in the second round who have played them as tough as anybody has. So that's where I think the Bucks, their road is really tough in facing those injuries. And because of that, I'm very confident in Toronto. They've gelled very quickly since making the trades at the trade deadline. And I think they've got the right kind of mindset. And most importantly, Toronto's healthy entering the playoffs for the first time in who knows how long. Every year, it seems like they're battling some key injury.
Yeah.
And this year, they're not. So that's really important for them.
And I want to this is something I think it's a debate very prevalent in the Eastern Conference in terms of that Celtics-Bucks matchup that you mentioned. I mean, you look at two players like Kyrie and like Giannis, and obviously Giannis is the better all-around talent in terms of just his prolific athleticism, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. But Kyrie's the proven closer. So who do you take in a head-to-head series?
Yeah, if it comes down to a game-winning play, I'm going to take Kyrie Irving because we've seen him do it, and we've seen him do it on the biggest stage. And it's always easier for a guard who has a really great handle to make a play than it is for a big man who's not that Giannis is relying on others, but he still needs a little bit of help to get there. Someone has to get him the ball in the right spot versus him just catching. So I would go Kyrie only because the track record is there, and again, it's a little bit easier for the guard to make the big play.
You said it, Keith. I'm on the same page as you, and I can't wait to watch these next 2 days unfold. As of right now, we're going, 2-7 first-round matchup, Clippers and Nuggets? Is that what you would have?
That's what I'm leaning towards, yeah. Okay. We'll see. check with me later tonight in about 12 hours. I might have a whole different answer.
Oh, then you're calling it back. All right. But we've got this recorded now. Keith, where can listeners find you?
Yeah, the best place to find me on Twitter at KeithSmithNBA. I'm pretty active on there, maybe too active for some, but I enjoy the back and forth. Just keep it civil, be nice. There's no reason to be mean to each other. And then you can find my written work at Yahoo Sports and Real GM. Get a lot of off-season stuff coming, off-season preview work, free agency work, all those kind of things that interest me there. And then if you're interested at all in Celtics-specific coverage, I'm at Celtics Blog as part of SB Nation. I've got a lot of Celtics-specific work up there.
Well, Keith, thank you so much. And do not apologize for staying relevant and up to the minute on Twitter. I appreciate it. And we'll be looking for some fun discourse following an exciting night of games tonight in the Western Conference. And then, of course, the Clippers closing out the regular season at home against the Jazz on Wednesday, April 10th. And then it's the playoffs. Keith, once again, thank you very much. And for everyone listening, remember, you can find this podcast wherever you get your pods at, or at clnsmedia.com.